Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we record the oral histories of current and former DOC employees. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, October 4th, 2019, is Kathy Flowers. Thanks for joining us, Kathy.
Thank you.
Before we begin, Kathy, could you please provide us with a brief overview of your DOC career?
Well, I worked for the Department of Corrections for 23 years, 3 years at Central Office, and the rest at SEI Camp Hill. I started July 10th, 1989. I worked in the restricted housing unit as an officer, as a sergeant, and as a lieutenant. I work in the SMU as an officer, as a sergeant, and a lieutenant. I was on the CERT team for 22 of those years.
Wow. And what year did you retire?
2012.
Okay, 2012. All right, well, thank you. All right, so let's get to the riot. I'm going to set the stage for you. It's around 2:33 p.m. on Wednesday, October 25th, 1989. Where are you and what's happening?
Well, first off, let me say, I was at 2 o'clock. I was in the main stockade field. There were 6 officers and probably 1,000 inmates. My relief was late that day, so I got relieved about 2:15 that day. By 2:30, I had just gotten home, and I had to basically turn around and come right back into work.
And how did you find out that you had to come back in? Did somebody call you?
Yes. Okay. Sergeant Cleaver called me.
Okay. So tell me, as you're driving back to the facility, what are you seeing?
Well, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience at the time, so I really didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know really what was going on. All I knew was that I was going back into work and that something had happened. So at the time, I didn't really have any expectations.
Okay. And when you reported to the institution, like some people went to the main gate, some people went to the rear gate, where did you report to?
I went to the main gate, and then I was directed to the front of the administration building.
Okay.
And can I interject something here real quick?
Yes.
I had taken an EMT course, and I during the course of the class, we were told about the 1,000-yard stare. Well, when I got to the front of the administration building, I saw, at the time it was Sergeant Wolf, and one other officer, and I can't remember his name, but they were both sitting on the steps in front of the administration building, and they both had that 1,000-yard stare. That was when it really impacted me that something was going on.
So tell the listeners what you mean by the 1,000-yard stare.
When people are in shock, their body just shuts down. They are literally looking at nothing. They're not seeing anything. They're not even processing anything. So the look they have is that it looks like they're looking off into the distance, but at nothing.
Mm.
There was literally nothing there.
And did you know, were these people, had they been hostages, or they were just in shock from the overall experience of what was going on?
I think they were in shock from the overall experience.
Okay.
And I can't remember the officer's name, but his pant legs were torn from literally the belt loop all the way down to the outside of his pant leg. The whole pant leg was torn.
Wow. Okay, so you said you were assigned to the administration building then?
Originally, yes.
Okay, and what did you do there, and how long were you there?
You know, I wasn't there long. Mike Lady was the training coordinator,
mm-hmm.
and he came and got me, something that really, really impressed me. He came and got me and said, you have to come and see this. And he took me to the back of the administration building, and the state troopers were lined up getting ready to go inside. And there was a female lieutenant that was commanding them and leading them in. He said, "You watch her, kid. You watch her and learn from her." Excuse me.
That's okay.
But I was really impressed by that. She led them into the, excuse me, into the prison. And I just thought that was really cool.
Wow. Wow. And he obviously, Mike, saw something in you that he thought you needed to see that. And great. I'm glad that he did that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to think so.
And then what happened?
I was given a 38 and a handful of ammunition, and I was taken to the main gate, and there were some inmates sitting along the fence line right inside the main gate, and I was told, watch them. Just watch them. That was really, at the time, all the information I was given. Just watch them. But then later, they took us into the prison. The local police, fire, everybody was there, and they formed this huge gauntlet from group one, group two, all the way to the main gate. And myself and a bunch of other officers were taken inside, and we were escorting inmates out through that gauntlet one at a time out to the main gate. I can't remember.
Well, where were those inmates going? Like, why were they going to the main gate? Were they injured?
No. They were all handcuffed, and they were all being taken to other jails.
Oh. And this was the first night?
I don't see. See, it's... I'm trying to think. Was it the first night or the second night?
Well, it's interesting because I have found some pictures of that. I'll have to look to see if I can see you in it. But there were these people lined up along that main walkway that ran between the education building and E Block. Is that kind of what you're talking about? And
yes.
And it was dark, and there were inmates being escorted handcuffed through this gauntlet, like you explained, and it was dark in these pictures, and I'm thinking, what is this? So
yes, and those inmates, see, I can't remember, it's been so long.
Mm-hmm.
But we were escorting them, I think, to the main gate. I really think so.
Hmm.
It might be something that you might want to look into that.
Yeah.
But well, I remember escorting them through the gauntlet.
Okay. Wow.
I also remember, now I've never been in the military, and I've never been in a war zone, but the next day, that's exactly what it looked like. It looked like a war zone.
Okay, well, let me back you up. So we're still the first night. When did that end for you? When did you go home?
I didn't. I don't think any of us went home. I think we stayed there. We were there for 24. I know none of us went home.
Okay. And then the next day, which was Thursday, October 26th, after the inmates had watched the news around 6:30, they became enraged, and then they broke out again. And that was around 6:30, 7 o'clock. So tell me what you remember from that point forward.
It's funny you say that, because we were in the cell blocks. And again, I was pretty new, and some of the officers were showing me that they had taken the metal panels off the top of the blocks. And the officers were telling me that they could literally reach up and grab those panels and pull the doors open.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know this for a fact, but I had been told that some of the officers asked for chains to chain the cell doors closed. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what some of the officers told me.
And so you're on the cell block?
Yes. And the inmates were in the cell. And the tiers were just littered with garbage, just littered. And there were probably 6 or 7 inmates to each cell.
Mm-hmm.
The inmates were all handcuffed together. And really, we were just there. I mean, I think we were also overwhelmed it wasn't as if anybody was making rounds or checking cell doors or anything. We were just there.
So at 6:30 or 7 o'clock, when they start breaking out, where are you? I mean...
Okay, now that second day, I had gone home.
Okay.
So the first night, we were there all night, and into that day, it was probably sometime in the early afternoon, I went home, I got some sleep. When I woke up, it was all over the news.
Okay.
They were out again, and then I came back in. I don't know how much to give you after that. Like I said, it was a blur.
Well, and that second day then, they had the run of the entire facility, and probably around the time that you got there, they had just maybe rescued the people that were trapped above control. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I was at the main gate at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back there, again, they gave me a .38 and a handful of ammunition, and they put me at the main gate, and I worked with Paul Beck and George Miller. The three of us were there together working the doors. Because I remember George Miller stood at the outside door and he had me stand at the inside door, and basically we were passing the key back and forth, trying to get everybody in as quickly as possible, until finally we were given the go ahead and go both doors so people could just go through.
Wow. Now there was a discussion, a lot of people talk about the fact that Commissioner Owens was there and wouldn't let Sergeant Beck open up the doors to let the state police in. Were you there for that?
Yes, that's what came with George Miller and I passing the key back and forth. We only had the one key for both doors.
Okay.
So he stood at the outside door and I stood at the inside door, and finally Paul Beck just said, no, open them both. So we opened them both and just let them go.
Because from what I hear, that Beck was like begging the commissioner, let me open these doors, and the commissioner, I guess, wasn't making the decision or giving him the direction to do that, so he just, on his own, Beck said, open the doors.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
A lot of people refer to Beck now as Saint Beck for doing that.
I can see why.
Wow. So you were at the main gate then for the rest of that night? And into the morning, obviously. In the morning, then, before morning, the state police assaulted, and then everybody went in and regained control of the facility.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
It was sometime, I believe it was later that day, or maybe even the following day. Supposedly, there were six inmates that they couldn't find, and they thought that they might be in the superintendent's compound, which was right there at the key room at the time. And they had myself and Mona Whitehead, who was still in the training academy at the time. We were the only two people that were small enough, apparently, to fit through the key room window. So they had the two of us climb through the key room window. They gave us each a .38, and they said, go and see if those inmates are in there. And we had no idea what we were doing. We're walking through, things are smoking, there's a little bit of fire over here, and we're just walking around looking to see if there are inmates back here. They weren't. Thankfully for us, they weren't.
Wow. And I know, too, that I talked to some people where, I guess while you were doing that, there were people in the tunnels looking for inmates as well. And but it turned out to be...
And I thought that was where they found them.
Well, I didn't hear that. I hear that it was just really a paper glitch, and it really came...
Oh, okay.
It really came down to one inmate, and one of the officers was directed to take that one inmate who was providing information to Cumberland County, and he did that, but there was no record, and so finally he came forward and said, yeah, I moved that inmate. I mean, they knew exactly which inmate they were looking for. They just couldn't account for him. And sure enough, then count cleared after that. Now, I heard that from John Polakovich and a couple other sources and people that I interviewed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But still, that's interesting, because somebody else talked to me about the fact that somebody was trapped in control and was a bigger officer, and he squeezed through the key room window.
Yes.
And they
Yes,
were
there was a
surprised.
Captain Bowser.
Yes.
And he probably weighed, I mean, he was only made, I don't know if he was even 6 foot tall, and he had to have weighed easily 400 pounds.
So how did he squeeze
And
through those bars?
He made it through that window. Well, you know what? Fear does many things to people.
Yeah. Wow. So you got selected to do that because of your small stature. Yay, lucky you, huh?
Exactly, yes.
And then what happened after that?
I think we were busy just escorting inmates back and forth. We were delivering meals to blocks, just, you know, trying to get things settled down, really.
And so I'm thinking about you as a female in a male-dominated agency, really. Gosh,
mm-hmm.
You must have been only one of a few females that were inside at the time. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And
I remember, I remember there was a black female. She was an officer, but she had been out to dinner, and she came in. She was wearing a dress. I mean, and she was. We were all right there working together, and. But honestly, I don't remember. I don't remember at the time there being any other women there during the riots. I'm sure there were, but I don't remember seeing them.
Did you ever have the thought, like, okay, these are a bunch of crazy men running around. What if they get their hands on me?
You know, it's funny you say that, because the first night I was there, I actually got a chance to call my parents. And my dad said to me, he said, you know, if they get you, you know what they're going to do to you.
Oh,
he said, you keep yourself safe. And I said, don't worry, I'll be fine. I was never in fear for my life, but that's because I wasn't in there when it actually happened. I mean, I was already out when it first started.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really have to fear for my life or anything else.
And the second night too, I guess you were so close to the exit or the entrance of the facility that, you know, you weren't deep inside.
Exactly.
And you certainly weren't alone.
Right.
Okay. Wow.
Now, I will say, the first day that it happened, we were told first thing that morning, something's going to happen. Our intel says we know something's going to happen. So keep yourself safe. I was the only woman working on that side of the prison that day, and my relief was 15 minutes late. So that was probably the luckiest day of my life. Thinking back on it, I was very lucky that day.
Wow, because you were right there, in the middle of all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and when you say you're in the yard, how many inmates? 1,000?
Probably 1,000 inmates to about 6 officers. Yeah.
What other things do you remember that you would like to share?
Oh, let's see. Honestly, off the top of my head, I really couldn't say. A lot of it was a blur, and a lot of it just happened a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that, like I said, I remember that second day, and it looked like a war zone. I had never experienced anything like that before.
Mm-hmm. And so everything was on fire, and helicopters, and smoke, and then
yep.
The mayhem.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to ask you, since you said you had taken a course to become an EMT, and you were right
yes.
there, now you were probably very busy with manning the gate and the doors there, but the triage, EMS triage, was right there outside the main gate. So did you...
Yes, it was right across the street, yes.
Did you happen to, like, take a look and kind of see, wow, you know, that could have been you as an EMT doing that as well?
Honestly, I didn't even have time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even go over there. I just didn't have time.
Right. Mm. Interesting time in our history, isn't it?
Mm. It was. Well, in the aftermath, you know, we worked 12 hours a day for probably 6 months, and, like, everything was chained and barred, and it was just, you know, putting everything back together, it was really an experience.
Mm. And so they did fired, you know, the administration and brought in a new prison administration. And what can you tell me about that? What do you remember about them? And then also, can you talk to me about what it was like as they were rebuilding the facility?
Well, you know, they brought in Beard and Kyler.
Mm-hmm.
Beard was kind of aloof. You know, I didn't really get to talk to him a lot, but Kyler, he came in like a gangbuster, you know. Like I said, I was on the search team at the time, and he came out to our training and he said, "This will never happen again." Mm-hmm. He said, "I want you guys prepared. I want you guys ready. And next time, it won't be the state police going in, it'll be you guys going in."
Wow.
He really got everybody's respect.
Yeah.
When he did that, or at least the guys on the search team. Afterwards, it was really tight. It was, you know, everybody was escorted. Everybody was, everything was chained and locked. There were no activities, none. You know, the education building was gone. The gym was gone. They had a movie theater that was gone.
Mm. Yeah, they damaged most of the facility.
Yeah, yep.
And then I guess it was a matter of shuffling inmates around to free up a housing unit to allow it to be torn down and then have it, you know, be rebuilt. So it was just probably a lot of shuffling for a good while then.
Yeah, and like I said, for a while, we had 4, 5, 6 inmates to a cell. I mean, it was, you know, they were just finding places to sleep, mattresses on the floor, and...
Wow.
It was just something.
Yeah. Something you'll probably never forget, but yet, and very vivid, even though it's 30 years later.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I had some people tell me that they could smell the furniture factory burning days later. They could recall that smell, so.
Yes, well, and the education building, it burned so bad that the glass in the windows melted.
Yeah, the fires were so intense. Now, did you have any like post-traumatic stress as a result of that? Any bad nightmares or anything like that?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to share that we might have missed?
I don't think there is.
Okay, Kathy, I just want to thank you for participating in this program.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Great, thanks.